Was that the high hurdle? Was it all? Was
oh,
it
no. No, no, not by a long shot.
Right, okay.
But that was the first hurdle. And that was, we got by that in the spring of 72. Then things got quiet for a period of time. Because after we'd gotten the charter, but after all, they had said it wasn't feasible. They had said it wouldn't fly. They said we couldn't do it. So then they were stuck with their own predictions, and I'm sure they believed their own predictions. And so, all right, Brennan's got a charter, but he'll never start the law school. It'll never work. So they sort of paid no attention to us. And during the rest of 1972, we did the things that we rented the building. We prepared the application. We contacted the 300 people who'd written to us. We did all hired teachers and ordered law books and went out and got chairs and blackboards and other things to get started with. So in January of 1973, we began with our first class. It was a night school class with 75 students. And still, hardly anyone paid any attention to us. But there was a little story in the paper that Cooley had opened and, you know, congratulations and that sort of thing. And then the opposition began. And I think the principal source of the beginning of it was a professor of law at Wayne State University, whose name escapes me now. It's Maurice something or...
It's Kelman.
Kelman, yeah.
K-E-L.
Yeah, K-E-L-M-A-N.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be it.
Had you ever crossed his path in your early...
No, except I think he may have been on the Committee of Scholars.
Oh, I
think he was one of the people on the Committee of Scholars. So he had some lingering annoyance over the fact that we outmaneuvered them on that. But he proceeded to write some sort of a... Oh, let me back off. I don't think that happened. Still nobody paid any attention to us in January. But in April of 1973, just 3 or 4 months after we started the school, Thomas Cooley Law School got a letter from the unanimously signed by all the members of the Michigan Board of Law Examiners that our school was reputable and qualified and that our graduates would be able to take the bar examination in Michigan. Now that was a wonderful story how that came about. We had a dinner here in Lansing. We had then organized our board, and we now had a dozen or so people on the board. And we had a dinner for them at the Walnut Hills Country Club. And Millard Rudd, who was then the consultant to the American Bar Association, who was out of the University of Texas, came here to speak to us, to tell us about what we needed to do to become an ABA accredited school. And I brought in a mystery guest to speak and participate in that dinner meeting that I didn't tell my board who it was. But it was a man named Thomas M. Cooley II, who had been dean of the University of Pittsburgh Law School and had been a faculty member there for a number of years, and who was a grandson of the Thomas Cooley after whom our school was named. Well, we had a wonderful evening, and we heard from Millard Rudd about all the pitfalls and the problems of getting ABA accreditation, and then we heard a nice talk from Tom Cooley, who told us how his grandfather would have been proud of what we were doing and all this sort of thing, and he was just generally very, very encouraging. And that was on a Friday night. And I think early the next morning I put Professor Cooley back on the airplane. But I remember I had breakfast the following morning at the old Jack Tar Hotel with Stanley Beatty. And, oh, also our guests invited to this thing were the members of the Board of Law Examiners. So Stan was one. And Doug Roche, whose father was... General Motors, Chairman of General Motors. Forget his father's name. But Doug, it was a young attorney at Dickinson, the Dickinson Wright Law Firm in Detroit.